This is a Triple M Footy podcast. With all the latest news and stories that matter right now in footy, it's Tom Brown's news.
Round three kicks off tonight with a fascinating clash between the Dogs and Lions under the lid. But before the on-field action starts, it's time to get across all the news with Tom Brown. My name's Rudy, and Tommy, before I bring you in, I'm going to play some audio from you last night.
Meanwhile, Saturday is shaping as the ultimate Alistair Clarkson-Sam Mitchell grudge match. Seven News can reveal tonight, unusually. Look, both teams will share the same charter flight home. Clearly a talking point, because it could be frosty, Tim. The coaches don't see eye to eye. The CEO, Justin Reeves at Hawthorn, also at odds with Clarkson. That'll be an interesting flight coming home. It's a standard flight, but unusual relationships, Tim.
So, Tommy, what's the update there?
The update, Rudy, just for context, is the AFL, as per my report, organised a shared flight out of Launceston on Saturday for both North and Hawthorn. Alistair Clarkson was asked about whether he'd go on that flight this morning, and he acknowledged, in light of the fact that the racism investigation is continuing and obviously there's Hawthorn people that are interviewed as part of that and all the like, that Clarko wouldn't take that particular shared flight on Saturday afternoon home. He'd take his own commercial flight home. So Clarko, further to my report, has acknowledged it's, I guess, a bit of a conflict or a bit inappropriate to go on that flight home. So there's been a development further to that story last night, Rudy. The broader discussion, of course, is what's become a massive grudge match this weekend. Damien Barrett's written about this week. It's a lot of history between Alistair Clarkson and Sam Mitchell, notwithstanding any of the current investigations and things like that. It dates back essentially to 2011, when Clarkson allegedly sent Mitchell a text asking why he'd never played well in finals. Mitchell speaks about that in his book, so it's fairly factual. Caroline Wilson reported in a series of articles that Clarkson took Mitchell's phone when Mitchell's kids were a bit crook. Separately, Clarkson also questioned the potential impact on Mitchell's career, according to Caro's articles, given the fact that he had kids so close together. And they had a very productive relationship, Clarkson and Mitchell, but it all culminated, of course, when Mitchell effectively took Clarko's job in the end. They're facing off against each other on Saturday in Launceston against the backdrop of this highly complicated racism investigation at the moment. The Herald Sun reports today, and I asked Gill about this yesterday, whether there could be mediation in terms of resolving the racism issue. Gill didn't address that issue specifically yesterday, but did hint that perhaps the end of that investigation could be coming to a close. I'd be surprised if that's the case, but that's what Gill indicated could be the case yesterday. So you've got this grudge match and potential progress on the investigation. Clarko also not taking the flight home. The other adjunct to all this story, which I reported last night, is there's tension between Justin Reeves, the Hawks CEO, and Clarko, which has been ongoing following Clarkson's exit. And I should just add, in fairness to Clarko there, Rudy, just to emphasise that any of the suggestions of bad blood or history between Clarko and Sam Mitchell and their history is quite separate to any of the suggestions involved in the outstanding racism investigation.
The Saturday Rub, Friday Huddle, Sunday Rub, Midweek Rub, Tom Brown's News, and all the footy podcasts you need are in one place. Subscribe to Triple M Footy on the Listener app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Big week for the St Kilda Footy Club, Tommy. Their 150th year celebrations culminating with a game against Essendon on Saturday night. What's the latest with the Saints?
Yeah, the big 150th celebrations for the Saints. This is a significant event for the club on Saturday night. And I have done some investigations as to whether one of the club's greatest legends, Tony Lockett, will come to this event. For St Kilda has got its fingers crossed. They hope so. But I was in contact with Plugger, albeit by text, yesterday. And he's still undecided. So it will be interesting to see if Tony Lockett, perhaps the, certainly one of the greatest legends in St Kilda's history, will be able to come to these celebrations on Saturday night. He's a relative recluse these days. He keeps a very low media profile, the St Kilda and Sydney legend, but he's undecided whether he'll come, Rudy. It was interesting at Ross Lyon's press conference this morning, the undefeated Ross Lyon. I love Ross Lyon's press conferences. Wasim Akram rocked up, which is fairly random, I thought.
It was some of the more interesting acting I've seen since Steve Smith's video about the IPL the other night.
Anyway, in summary, just looping back to the story, Plugger considering coming. I think it's unlikely at this stage, but you never know whether Plugger will be there on Saturday night. But I've been in contact with him, and he's unsure at this stage.
Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
When you listen to Triple M Footy in 2023, wherever your seat is won't matter.
Look at them rise to their feet!
Because we'll bring you the moments that will get you out of it.
Should I get up?
picked up by Bontempelli. What a first quarter he's having.
Here's the magician. He's got one already. Yes, sir, Dane.
Tonight, join the Temper Mattress call team from Marvel Stadium for the Western Bulldogs in Brisbane.
For Ream Hot Water and McDonald's. Triple M rocks footy.
Now, Tommy, Mason Cox is going to miss up to 4 weeks. What has happened there?
I ran into Mason last night and he intimated or hinted to me that there'd be a big story this morning concerning Mason Cox, and he was right. He kept me wondering, Rudy. I couldn't solve it. He was there at the Glamour on the Grid event last night, but he will miss up to 4 weeks with bleeding essentially around his rib. This was his explanation today on radio.
Hematoma in the rib.
In layman's terms, it just means bleeding. Is that right?
Yeah, internal some like bleeding. Internal bleeding on inside that rib. He just got bumped. You'll love this. Got bumped
in the game.
In the game, coming onto the ground from one of the little fellas. I'm not sure who it was. And yeah, just got me in a real good spot.
Unfortunate for Mason Cox. What's the backup plan? Well, I guess it paves the way for Reece McGuinness and Ash Johnson to play. Ash Johnson, I think, kicked 4 goals in the VFL last weekend. So McStay could go second ruck, which would help, obviously, Darcy Cameron. I think Darcy Cameron does about 80 or 85% of the ruck work anyway. But look, Mason is a loss and obviously compounds Collingwood's injuries off the back of Jeremy Howe and also Brody Myercheck. And also Lipinski. So, look, you wouldn't say they're building up Collingwood's injuries. I'm sure they can cover for them, but they have got 4 reasonably significant ones. Having said that, they come up against Richmond tomorrow night without Dustin Martin and Jacob Hopper. So I think it's 6 of 1 or 6 of the other, Rudy.
This is Tom Brown's News, bringing you the latest in footy every Monday, Thursday and Friday. Here at First on Listener.
All right, Tommy, before we go, you've brought some nuggets for us.
We've got some nuggets, Rudy. I like a few nuggets on a Thursday. Let's start with Ben King, the Gold Coast forward. There will be strong interest from the Bombers, Melbourne, Collingwood and St Kilda, to name a few. He is out of contract and a restricted free agent at the end of next year, and clubs will come hard. But it is interesting that my understanding is there's already a degree of interest from Essendon, Melbourne and Collingwood behind the scenes, and certainly St Kilda. And there is a huge race on for Ben King. He will earn an absolute fortune.
St Kilda in particular never really hid that they're into Ben King from the start.
They want to reunite the brothers. I'm sure it's Stephen Silvani and Graham Allen's number one priority.
You'd think so. Now, the AFL, what priority is it to them to chase up the incident with the Gabba lights going out on Friday night, Tom?
I went to the sports conference yesterday and just got the impression from Gill that he wasn't unbelievably wrapped with a couple of little aspects from the weekend. I think the handling of Friday night, just in terms of the sequencing, raised eyebrows, just in terms of the fact that they perhaps could have done better in terms of communicating and things like that. So I think that's been mentioned to the clubs this week at a gather-round meeting, and the AFL will just try and tidy up some rules around that lights-out scenario. It probably won't happen again, but just think it's not sure everyone was that impressed with that at the AFL, Rudy.
Now, Tommy, Gil McLachlan spoke at a sport function last night, and you picked up some nuggets.
I did enjoy some of Gil's nuggets. Let's start with the grand final time. The AFL will release the time of this year's grand final in the next couple of weeks. Gil, at that sports conference that I was at yesterday, had this to say in regards to the timing of the grand final.
It's just important to people, that day slot. But I feel, and I said this the other night, the presentation we know could be better.
Yep.
So you have to manage the whole journey and bring people with you and make sure that what you go to is actually so much better that actually people understand why you made the decision. People just expect the best now, and that has its... I think that's good for us. I think it's challenging for others, and that we're constantly aware of all that every day.
Rudy, there's few talking points in football that gets fans going with various opinions more than the time of the grand final. It's a sacred time, the existing 2:30 or 3 o'clock time slot, because it produces a certain energy throughout Saturday. You get a certain style of game, like would Geelong have demolished Sydney in such convincing fashion had it have been impacted by the weather or by the nighttime circumstances? Having said that, we've had nighttime cricket for the best part of 40 years. We don't question the results of the preliminary finals. You were mentioning earlier, arguably the best game last year was Collingwood Geelong as the darkness descended on the MCG. There's that age-old debate, like Eddie Maguire, who's just been to Dubai, showed incredible fireworks at one of the leading horse races over the weekend. They were great. And Gil's saying there that the viewers expect the best and the audience expects the best. So I get that it's a valid debate, But then again, sort of, do we care? Like, the fireworks in the grand final are the game itself. So do we care about that? Of course you would get better entertainment at nighttime and in terms of, you know, concerts and so forth. And this is the big one, obviously, the television audience, just by way of figures. And you can dissect these figures whichever way you like. But the grand final in 2022, which was briefly the most recent one, was 3.06 million viewers, which I think was the highest number one TV program for the ratings survey year in Australia, which is a great figure the AFL delivered on. You know, but conversely, the nighttime figure for the 2021 grand final in Perth between the Demons and Western Bulldogs, which was basically afternoon into the Eastern markets, nighttime into the Perth market, that was 4.11 million by way of an average audience. So the audience is up to 25% bigger at nighttime or twilight if you have it there. So that's a convincing figure. And what Gil's saying there is that, look, they do like the presentation, which is the look of the game at twilight or night, but you've got to get it right so people come along with you and forget about the lack of tradition. The other factor is the AFL does earn a lot of money, and so do some of the marketing companies, out of the hospitality, like the September Club, in and around the grand final. But I guess you could shift those events if you had it at twilight, just party in the Yarra Park later. Rudy, you just have to get permission from the council to keep the music going.
I'm sure that'd be forthcoming. Now, he also spoke, Gil, about who will succeed him.
Now, Gil indicated yesterday, Rudy, that he will leave now in a matter of weeks, around Gather Round. He's essentially committed to that. What does that tell you? That the race for Gil's job is coming to a conclusion. My mail overnight is that it could be down to two candidates. None of this is official, that it could be down to Brendan Gale and Andrew Dillon. I've got separate firm mail that Andrew Dillon will get that role, the CEO role, and take over as CEO in coming weeks, the league's current football boss and also legal boss. But this was Gil McLachlan, interestingly, commenting on the role at that sports conference yesterday. And you'll hear here, he does hint, basically, that it needs to be someone from within the AFL system. So I think you can probably discount, based on Gil's view, these two external mystery candidates.
I think it's healthy that there are a number of candidates. I think the job, certainly in my time, has grown. And, you know, there's the game, and then there's all of the other stuff, which is hugely challenging. I think I agree with the part that it's a difficult job to do if you haven't had a level of grooming.
There you go. So that race for Gil's job, which has been protracted, and there's been criticism in relation to how long it's taken, will come to a conclusion, and we'll get a new boss in the next few weeks. Gil's got plenty of outstanding issues, though, Rudy, like the collective bargaining agreement, the Hawthorn racism investigation. He's got concussion bubbling along. There's all sorts of issues that he wanted to try and solve before he'll leave. I don't think he'll get all of those done. But the broad point that I'd like to make is that if you look at the crowd numbers this year and the games and the state of the game, it's in a pretty good state.
Now, one last thing, Tommy, before we go, the Coaches Association, what's going on there?
The Coaches Association spoke to Alistair Nicholson yesterday, and Jay Clark, Triple M's own Jay Clark, has written about this and put this story on the agenda this week in the Herald Sun, are concerned about stress amongst the coaches. Their key points are that the coaches' soft cap, which is the amount you can spend on football, whilst it's gone up a little bit in the last couple of years, or this year in particular, it hasn't returned to pre-COVID levels. It's putting stress on coaches. I'll give you some examples. Of the supported clubs, i.e. the clubs that get money off the AFL, which is about 11 or 12 of them, the maximum coach payout, even for like a senior coach, even if they've got a contract, is 6 months. That's capped, their payout. So even if someone like Luke Beveridge has a contract, there's an argument to say that his contract would be capped at 6 months by way of payout. At the lower level, for the development coaches, their payouts are capped at 1 or 2 or 3 months. So they face a lot of job uncertainty in an already uncertain environment, which is coaching. So the Players Association essentially would like to see, if you've got a 3 or 4 year contract, those payouts increased. The AFL's view is that club football departments can operate more efficiently, and that's why they essentially decreased the football soft cap, which is the amount clubs can spend. The AFL wages have returned to pre-COVID levels. The players' wages have returned to pre-COVID levels. There is an argument that the coaches are copying a bit of a raw end of the bargain. The AFL is worried about waste, Rudy. They're worried about clubs that aren't going that well, going to spend crazy amounts of money, what Andrew Demetriou used to call phys edders. You know, you go and get some hamstring doctor from Germany and pay him some astronomical amount of money, and it blows out your football cap. I reckon a solution on all this would be to exclude, the coaches deserve good money, would be to exclude some of the coaches' wages from the soft cap and let the coaches earn what the market dictates. Now, I know that wouldn't be a popular view at AFL House, but I reckon that would be fair on the coaches and would mitigate some of those issues, which also include the fact that A lot of the assistants don't want to coach in Sydney because if you earn 120, 130, 140, 150 grand a year with two or three kids living in Sydney, it's impossible. So a lot of the coaches' wages at the top end are good, but a lot of the coaches' wages at the bottom end aren't good, and it's not necessarily the most attractive job at the moment.
Left us with plenty to think about there today, Tommy. Thanks heaps. Now, remember, you can catch every game across Round 3 on Triple M, starting with tonight's blockbuster at Marvel between the Western Bulldogs and Brisbane, live from 7 p.m. Melbourne time with Luke Darcy, Brian Taylor, Nathan Brown, Kate McCarthy, Ash Chua and Abby Holmes. We'll speak to you later.
That was Tom Brown's news. Come back every Monday, Thursday and Friday for more and subscribe to Triple M Footy on Listener or wherever you listen to get all our podcasts throughout the season. For Ream Hot Water and McDonald's, Triple M rocks footy.